speaking today with Jennifer Poole, who is candidate for at-large number 2, Houston City Council. Jennifer's first question I'd like to ask is, why are you running for this office?
Oh, I'm running because I love the city. I moved here 30 years ago with a full intention of staying. Born and reared in Beaumont, Texas, and Beaumont was too small for me. It was a great place to grow up. It was a wonderful place, small enough. But, you know, I just had the feel for a larger city, you know. And, of course, when I moved here, Houston wasn't quite 1 million people back then, so it was still relatively small. But I'm running because I believe that I bring something to council that hasn't been around for a long time. And that's a kind of experience that someone who understands, the experience that helps some people when I understand what's really going on. I've had 30 years working with the city, representing property owners and builders and developers in accessing city services, permitting, licensing. So I know what's going on down there. I've interacted with it. And so I see where things aren't done as well as they can. I want to bring an insight to the millions we spend every year on construction projects that, other than Steve Costello, don't have a clue about really the insides and outsides. And he may not have as much experience as I do.
Okay, tell me a little bit more about that. What kind of projects are we talking about, and where do you see room for improvement?
Well, the question comes is, what does the city do? What does the city build? Okay, it's especially now in the near future. The Rebuild Houston, we're going to rebuild the infrastructure. Water, sewer, drainage, roadways, sidewalks, curbs, all of that is lumped into that, as the mayor has described and it's been described. Well, I have experience in water, sewer, water treatment plants, sewer treatment plants. My experience is from over a lifetime is actually doing that. I've done that work. I've built a sewer treatment plant. I've been the project manager on a water treatment plant. So this is an insight that nobody else has. Now, I'm not saying that it gives me so much oversight that I'm the quintessential expert. But what it does do is when I see something come up, I have a different insight when I look at it. There's the question, and of course there's been some changes in legislation, the question concerning bidding, the bidding process. How transparent is the bidding process? I don't think it's transparent enough. I think that when several bids come in and the low bidder doesn't get it, and maybe not the second bidder, and it has nothing to do with whether you're a city company or not, I think that that begs the question that there needs to be something further looked into. I'm not declaring that there's something absolutely wrong in that, but where is the description of why? And when the citizens see this and they don't have the, and most people don't even see it, but if you see it and you ask the question why and you don't get an answer, that's when there's a problem. As far as some of the other items, process to get permits and licensing, I'm a firm believer that the process should be such that anybody, any citizen can walk in and be able to get a permit for whatever it is they need. I mean, it shouldn't be so complicated that you can't do it or you have to hire a specialist to get it. And currently, in most cases, you have to have a specialist just to clearly understand the levels and bureaucracy necessary just to get a simple permit, which is why the city is plagued with projects that have been bootlegged in or projects that have been done without a permit. The city is working diligently to try to catch those and red tag them and make them go get a permit, but they only get maybe 25-30% of it, sometimes more. But that means a loss of revenue, the potential for substandard work, and the possibility of a less than code installation or project. These are things that are all within the privy of watchdogging the work going on. There's a lot that can be done. Council members, even though the mayor proposes, the council disposes, there's still the possibility as a watchdog to bring these things to light, to take and shine a spotlight on places that are need to be questioned. The mayor, when controller, the performance audits, vitally important. Under catching some of the difficulties that were there, how to make the government run more efficiently, more effective in how it delivers services, that needs to continue. And some of the areas that haven't been looked at continue to need to be looked at.
Okay. Yeah, the city has done some things recently relating to development. I'm talking about the Historic Preservation Code, mm-hmm. and is now an ordinance that's in the works for regulating where dense construction can be. Do you have any, what's your assessment of these things?
I'm a native Texan, and so I always come down on the side of property rights. Person owns a piece of property, they have rights that go to their property, and those should be protected. Now, that being said, if a neighborhood or a group of neighborhoods or an area wishes to preserve their history, there needs to be a mechanism by which they can. There's some classic old homes that with a little bit of money can be restored to their historical value. I think that's wonderful. If we don't keep in touch with our past, then we lose something of what makes us Houston. Houston has always been a city of dead. Well, when it gets old, just tear it down and build something new. I've lived here 30 years. I mean, before I moved, I've seen it. Which I don't necessarily disagree with, but what I do want to see is that the city be prudent in how their development is done. The historical preservation, I think we should preserve our history if the people in a given area agree that that's what they want. And I think it should be a majority, and how it's laid out, the actual nuts and bolts of it, I still want to look at. Maybe it can be done better, maybe fairer, but you want to make sure that all voices in any given community are heard.
Okay. As you know, the big issue in the city recently has been the budget. There was a big shortfall in this year's budget. Some $100 million was cut. About 747 employees were laid off. What is your assessment of the budget that council passed for this fiscal year?
I think it was about the best that could have been done under the circumstances. I believe that, from what I know, the budget, some areas of the budget and the shortfalls, I don't want to say they were a surprise because I don't think there are any real surprises, but I think the extent of the shortfalls were underestimated. And the budget that was done and finally passed was probably about the best they could have done under the circumstances at this time. Again, I go back to the performance audits for efficiency. Also, in performance audits, to see if areas or subdivisions of the city, as far as within specific designated areas within the city, are really necessary anymore. I don't have any particular, but I think that the question needs to be asked. if we've had something for 20 years, is it still viable, or is it some, or have we duplicated somewhere? That needs to be done. And that's long term to try to trim the budget even more, as far as make it more efficient, government more efficient, and thereby affecting the budget. As far as what they did, I think their agreement around firemen's union, policemen unions, was about as good as you could have gotten at this time. Basically, they pushed off certain payments into the future, which at this time is the city saying, well, things are going to get better, and when that we do, we can reimburse the pension plans. I think that's probably about as fair as you could have gotten under the circumstances.
Do you think that the, you know, level of service that the city is doing now, because as many people say, the city is really a service provider to the citizens, do you think the level of services that the city is at now after this budget is kind of the new normal? Do you think that, you know, as financial picture improves, things should be restored, or do you think that it should be kept here and then maybe there's more cuts to be found?
I think first of all, I don't believe it's the new normal. I believe that it is a short term. I believe at some point in the near future, near meaning maybe 2 years, but maybe less, but because budget periods are such, probably not the next budget, but the following budget, I think we'll go back with increased revenues due to economic growth. I believe we'll be able to hire back in certain areas. I think the benefit, if you can call it that, of having to go to these cuts and the austerity that was done is that we will hire smarter, filling positions only as necessary to continue to provide the services that everyone's accustomed to. I think that there may be a benefit that's unforeseen at that time. I don't like anybody to lose their job. I've been in that situation, and I sure don't like to lose my job because of a downsizing, which was the favorite expression years ago. But sometimes there is a benefit that comes out of it, and I think that that's what we really need to look at. Can the city come out of this slump? Slump meaning lower revenues, a leaner, meaner, better, more efficient city. And I think you can.
Okay. On the ballot last year was a couple of propositions relating to the city. The first one was Renew Houston, now known as Rebuild Houston. Did you vote for the Renew Houston proposition?
Yes, I did.
And what is your assessment of how the rollout has gone for Renew Houston?
I believe that if I'd been on council, I would have tagged a few things and I would have questioned some things. Simply because I didn't understand stuff. I've understood some of the things by reading more, talking to people. The principle behind Rebuild Houston is what I'm really in support of. And the principle of that is pay as you go. The city carries a lot of debt now, and currently we've refinanced it at the incredibly low rates that are available now. You know, if we had a 1 or 2% tick up in the interest rates, our budget shortfall would be much, much more than it was. So I think ultimately for a city like Houston to continue to grow and thrive, that we need to cut up the credit card, to start paying as we go. And many arguments about whether or not it's a fee or a tax, it doesn't matter. The principle behind it is we're going to pay off debt and start building using revenues that are already available, not borrowing more money as far as through bond issues and the like. Because we get stuff done, yes, we'll build infrastructure. However, we're carrying debt, which passes it on to the future. I would like to see our city on much more firm financial footing.
Okay. Did you agree with the council's decision to exempt schools and churches from the drainage fee?
I think that the final decision that they came up with is that if the state government says that you're exempt, then you probably need to go on and follow the state's mandate. However, that being said, the decision that new facilities would not fall under that, I think, was a pretty good idea. That way it doesn't hurt anyone immediately. I think there's a real unfairness in a lot of the ways it's being implemented, and that goes to different companies that have large areas of impervious cover. Some of them already have built in retainage for their properties, and there's no direct correlation or effect that has on drainage. If you have a large piece of impervious cover and you have retainage, then what happens is the rainwater is held there until the rain stops or the flooding stops and it runs off. Now you do that so that it doesn't cause or impact any greater than when it was just grassland. And then that's not being really considered. And some of the companies out there, and I'm just pulling something out of my head, like the big car dealerships. I mean, they have acres and acres of impervious cover. Many of them have underground storage for the storm waters. Some don't. Those that don't should have to pay the fee full away. Some that do, you know, they've taken remedial action to prevent the flooding, which is the whole purpose of this. Now, going back to your question, because I didn't mean to avoid it, but I wanted to make that clear. I think that if you agree that this is a fee for service, which some people don't, a fee for service is paid by everybody. You pay the water bill. You pay your electric bill. Then why wouldn't you pay your storm bill? So, if you consider it as a fee, which I really see it as a fee, then no one's exempt. If you see it as a tax, which a lot of people argue, then you sort of make people exempt as you see fit. I don't think there's a lot of fairness in that. And the fairness is what I like to see. And everything I try to do, I've always tried to be fair. And the fairness of it is that the 70-year-old woman living in a small house who has a lot of impervious cover in the house on Social Security suddenly gets hit with a higher fee because we've exempted people that could have paid a lot easier than her. Maybe she should have had a $5 fee instead of exempting people who could have paid more. So there's a distinct unfairness in it when you look at it from a fee standpoint. Because if we're going to be, as I see it, fair in how we assess this drainage fee, then everybody should pay.
Okay.
And it should be fair to those people, especially those people that are less able to pay.
All right. The other proposition on the ballot, of course, concerned red light cameras. Did you vote to keep the red light cameras or vote to get rid of them?
I voted to keep them.
Okay. Do you agree with the mayor's decision to retain the cameras until the litigation is settled?
I don't know enough about the ins and outs of the legal aspects of it. I've heard a lot. I've heard the mayor talk about it. I've heard and read about the other side's argument about it. From what I understand, that the litigation and the bill, I mean, the city could end up paying as much as $18.2 million for turning off the red lights. I don't think anybody who voted to turn them off, to do away with red light cameras, expected that they're going to have to dig into their pocket with possibly higher taxes and fees because they voted to do away with them. Because I believe in principle, if I don't run red lights, red light cameras don't mean a thing to me. And I have had to pay three of them when they first turned them on. Yeah, and what happened was that I started slowing down. I took driver's ed when I got my driver's license, and occasionally you take the defensive driving course, and it still tells you, when you see a yellow light, you begin to slow down so that you can stop by the time it turns red. You don't speed up to try to race through the intersection. What I did after having to pay three of them is that I started following the law. As the law and the training I received, and everyone who got a driver's license in Texas has, you obey the law. If you obey the law, red light cameras don't mean anything.
Would you want to see council work toward the settlement with the camera company to get out from the contract, or stay in the contract till it runs out?
I think that the will of the people who voted against it should be upheld. Whether you argue that the referendum was illegal and shouldn't have ever been held, I come down on the side, if 50,000 people sign a petition and want it on the ballot, I wouldn't want to be an elected official to say, you know what, guys, I know you got 50,000 people and you want this referendum, but, you know, I'm not going to allow it. I'm not going to be that person, because I believe that because this is a democracy, and I believe in that real democracy, that the voice of the people should be heard. Now, in the end, in the election, in that election, the voice of the people came down that they wanted to do away with the red light cameras. Now, the rest is about litigation and contract law. And I studied contract law. And you can't, unless there's something in that contract that says you can avoid paying a penalty for canceling your contract early, then you have to pay it. Now, as I understand it, it's not a matter of whether we're going to pay it, it's a matter of how much. So therefore, before there's any decision made, I think council should all discuss it and decide and how to come down there. If it's a matter of settling, the council needs to understand that we've got to find possibly as much as $18 million. And that means that there may be more jobs cut, there may be more services cut, so that people will be able to run red lights again without getting penalized.
How would you assess Mayor Parker's first term in office?
I'm glad I wasn't mayor. I admire her tenacity, and I admire the fact that as a political figure and as a person who came out of the controller's office, which is a number cruncher, and to have to go through and make the hard decisions. And what's important to me is that she has made hard decisions. I may have disagreed with some of them, but if I disagreed, it may be because I just didn't understand all the details. But the fact is that somebody stood up and made them. Because historically, in the 30 years that I've lived here, I have seen where past mayors just kick the can down the road, waiting for the next mayor to do it. And it seems like the buck stopped with her, and she decided that she'd do something about it. I admire her for that. Whether I agree with how she did it, doesn't matter. I do agree with her that she did it, so that we're turning this around. Steve Costello's work for Prop 1 to set the groundwork for the city to be on pay-as-you-go as far as its construction and infrastructure rebuilding, I think long-term into the 21st century was probably a smart idea. I think that for our city, which I love, I wanted to see it grow. But I'd want the quality of life to remain the same. There are areas in this city that were annexed into the city 15, 20 years ago that still don't have water, city water and sewer. They're still on wells and septic tanks, but they're still paying city taxes. You know, we need to do something about it. And bond issues will never get there. It has to be a consistent, steady building program to catch up, hopefully, with our city. Projections, they're worth what they're worth. You know, word is that 20 years from now, we'll double our population. My question is, where is that water going to go if we don't start doing something now?
When Mayor Parker won election in 2009, she made history by being the first gay person elected to mayor in Houston. If you're elected to council, you would also make history as the first transgendered person elected to council. What does that mean to you?
It would mean the world to me. As a transgender person, I've had my fair share of prejudice, bigotry, hatefulness. I've lost jobs, lost family, lost friends by being true to myself. Now, that being said, the fact is that it would be history not just for me. It would be great. But the fact is that it would send a message to the rest of the world that Houston is open for business. That, as Kleinberg has said, that we are the example of how the rest of the United States will have to govern itself as a diverse society. In that case, everybody needs to be included in the process. And I look forward to coming to council and being able to look at things in a different way. To be the first transgender person ever elected to Houston City Council. If that happened, I would be the highest elected transgender person in America.
Okay. And why should people, when they go to vote this November, vote to make you the next council member for at-large number two?
Because I have experience. And I have the experience and leadership to assist in taking this city into the 21st century. I look at our city as it is, but I also look at our city as how it can be. The maintenance of our quality of life that we have and improving that quality of life by improving our green areas, our neighborhood parks, all of these things, our paths, our nature paths, the walkways and the bikeways around the city, to make our city even more livable than it is. We have a lot of work to do. But if we don't start now, looking 20, 25 years out, then, you know, we're all going to wake up 25 years from now and be sorry that we didn't. And I'm the person that can do that. I've got the experience. But experience inside city government through, you know, Building Standards Commission, Police Advisory Commission, Special Task Force I've been appointed to, advisory panels. As far as leadership, I've shown that. As far as being active in civil rights, social justice, non-discrimination around the city, I've been doing that all my life. Fighting for other people. Service work. I spend about 25% of all my time in service work, where there's nothing gained. Unless you look at the organizations I do service work with, you wouldn't even know I did those. But those are just as important as the work I do to put bread on my table and the political work I do. I'm an advocate for everybody. I have been in a place of privilege, which is a white male in America. And when I chose to be true to myself and who I'd always been, all of that privilege went away, and I understand the struggle that a majority of our citizens has. And I'm going to bring that insight and sensitivity to City Council.
Jennifer Poole, thank you very much for talking to me today.
You're welcome.